This week in the studio with me, Luke Mathers, author of Stress Teflon and about to launch a new book called Reset, which I've been talking to him a lot about in the development. We're going to chat today about stress habits and how the two are connected. Let's get it on.
Welcome to the Body Science Podcast, bringing you everything you need, want, and should know about health, fitness, nutrition, and training. As always, the information contained in this podcast is for the information purposes only and is not designed to diagnose or be prescriptive to treat, prevent, or manage any injury, disease, or other health-related condition. This podcast is brought to you by Calm Stress Support. Calm Stress Support is a product on a mission to help you find your calm and live life better. Six powerful herbs combine in effective therapeutic dosages designed to reduce the symptoms of stress and mild anxiety, soothe the nerves, calm the mind, and support general mental well-being. This revolutionary formula is all about assisting you in finding balance again. Calm Stress Support is the new lifestyle supplement by Body Science, formulated to be the new daily staple in your health and wellness routine that you just can't go without.
Welcome to Body Science HQ, where everyone is de-stressed. We've got in the room Luke Mathers, author of Stress Teflon. How are you, mate?
Very well. It's always nice to be back at Body Science.
Good. And being in an era of COVID and a whole lot of things happening around the world, what's happening in America and all that, I thought we'd get back in and we talk about stress, habits, and how the two are connected. Now, you've written the book Stress Teflon, which people can get on Spotify, yep. LukeMathers.com.au.
Amazon.
But let's talk a little bit about you at first before we rip in. Like, you were an optometrist. I mean, obviously to do an optometry, you've got to be a smart guy. It's one of those almost perfect score type degrees to do.
It is. It was one of those strange ones. First day at uni, our dean of optometry stood in front of us all and said, "Congratulations, you've all done the hard part." I guess when you do that, you wander in there and you go from being sort of, you know, one of the smart ones at school to all of a sudden being very much the average one, because everyone in it's really smart.
It's an interesting journey why someone like you would want to leave very successful optometry to talk to people about stress. And it wasn't until you're part of a thoughts leaders group, like a international group of forward thinking talk speakers, is that right?
Yeah.
And one of your mentors in that group said something along the lines of that what you're doing is very much like optometry.
Yeah, he did. She did. This lady, her name's Lynn Kazalian. Yep. She's an absolute guru at getting messages across, and she's fantastic at helping people hone their messages of what they want to say. So she works a lot with CEOs and marketing people to get them to hone their message.
Yep.
And I was telling her about Stress Teflon, and she's like, "Oh, that sounds really great, and you looked at it from a really good angle, and that's all wonderful." And then I said, "Oh, I'm writing this book, Reset, about how to sort of change the way you think about what you're doing and all this sort of stuff, and you know, how that the basis of Reset is that we default to a certain way, we think a certain way because we've always thought that way, and how to reset that and change it." And she was really interested, and you know, there's no greater compliment you can get than a smart person giving you their full attention and being interested in what you're talking about. So I was like, you know, I was chuffed and loving life. And she's kind of looked at me strangely and gone, "What did you do before this?" And I said, "I've been an optometrist. I was part of, you know, the original people that started Specsavers in Australia. And, you know, I had the biggest optometry practice in the country and all of that sort of stuff. And I just had asked which one's clearer, this one, number one or number two." I'd asked it enough times. I did the maths. I'd asked it 5.5 million times.
Yeah.
And I just didn't want to do that anymore. And I've loved writing books. I've loved thinking a lot and doing that. And talking to someone who was really smart, she's gone, "Well, isn't that what Reset's about? Sort of looking for another option and which one's clearer, this one or that one?" And I'm like, "Shit, yeah, you're probably right."
So you're writing the not optometrist book then?
Yeah, I guess. I guess the beauty of Reset is it's all about sort of finding, well, what's another option in this, and not just going with what our default.
And that's where you started with Stress Teflon. Like, one of the big plays in Stress Teflon was the
Fork in the stress road.
Stress road. That's one of the things that I'd never heard of before.
I made it up.
Yeah, but that's your thing where Reset's coming from, because that's your time when you got to sit and think, like, where am I right now? And obviously with the fork, it's about, am I about to blow up or not blow up, or am I about to get stressed or think about this? But Reset is a similar concept to that, in that it's, you always have the two options. Which way do you want to go? Do you want to go with the tide, against the tide?
Yeah. Yeah. You do. And one of the things we talk a lot about in Reset are habits.
Yep.
All right. And habits control, you know, there's estimates anywhere between 45 and 75% of the things that we do. A lot of things we do are done on habits. You have a think about it. Could you imagine if every time you got in the car, you had to think, well, where do I put my keys? Which one's the accelerator again? How do I hold this? How do I turn left? All of those things are just done habitually. We don't think about them. They're just done on autopilot. And if we didn't have that, our brains would have to be, you know, five times the size they are now to have the computing power to be able to do that. Yeah. So we have habits for a reason. They're a really good thing. They get wired in so that we don't have to think about it. We just go down a familiar road. And that's really good. We need that. But the hassle is quite often the familiar road that we're going down isn't the one we probably should be going down and isn't the one that's helping. And so one of the things I want to do with Reset is make people work out which road they're going down and which road they want to go down and make sure the two are aligned.
So, mate, why is this relevant?
Why is it relevant?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really good question, isn't it? I think the main thing it's relevant with is that we're all just doing things by default. You know, you think you come out of uni talking about getting into optometry and you had to get at the top of your class and all of that sort of stuff to get into optometry. And it's true. Almost everyone that gets the top of their class goes and does medicine. It's a default.
Yep.
They might end up absolutely miserable. They might be terrible doctors, but they do things by default. And there's a lot of things that we do things up by default. And there's a lot of things that stress induces certain behavior. You're going to change your behavior because of stress. And whatever your default is sometimes gets you in trouble and doesn't help. And so I want people to actually stop when they get to that point where I'm feeling stressed now. Get curious, notice that you're feeling the stress, and then take the road that actually helps.
So, mate, how do we stop as humans to get curious? I mean, it's really easy for you to say, here's my theory, get curious. And let's just put a scenario out, like a stress scenario.
Mm-hmm.
I've walked in here and Claire, my EA, has missed an appointment in my diary and the person's downstairs waiting and there's three people waiting upstairs.
Yeah.
To talk to me in a Zoom conference. So how do I not just go down the left fork or the right fork? How do I get curious before I pick which way I'm going?
First one's to wait, all right? Just by waiting. I'm just going to wait for a minute. But wait, the word wait is W-A-I-T, and it's what am I thinking? And that's a great question to ask yourself, because you could sort of say, okay, she's made a mistake. She double booked me. I can go off my nut, all right? You've still got the same problem. Yep. You've still got someone downstairs that's waiting for you and another three people on a Zoom call. And now you've also got a very upset Claire because you've yelled at her and been not very nice.
I never yell.
Right. But yeah, your reaction to that has then added another problem. So you've still got your original two problems, and then I've added another one from whatever I've done. So quite often the stressful situation isn't the thing that causes the stress. It's your reaction to it that causes the stress. So to stop the fork in the stress road would be to stop at that particular moment and sort of say, okay, this is what's going on. What's my priorities? What are the things I need to do? And then deal with that one and work out how to mitigate the problem with the one that you can't deal with straight away.
Okay, so you've identified me on how to get curious, like stop and look at it. It's not going to change the world. You being angry is not going to make anything happen. So how do I get curious about it?
How do you get curious? I think one of the big things to do is notice what's going on in your body. You know, that sort of my hands are clenching and my teeth are clenching and, you know, my tongue's stuck to the roof of my mouth and I'm not breathing properly and I'm kind of tensing everything up. And noticing those things, we don't notice them.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we don't. So every habit that we do has a cue. It has something that you do and it usually has a reward at the end.
Okay.
All right. So if my cue is I feel hungry, I go to the fridge, I eat something nice, I don't feel hungry anymore and that tasted good. That's my reward. All right. What you've got to do in those sort of stressful situation is plant cues in there. Okay. Something's stressful, something's happened. I could blow up deluxe and yell and scream and throw toys out of the pram, or I could use that. Okay. Something's gone wrong. I can feel myself tensing up. That's my cue to say, okay, what's my best option here? And just stopping for those 2 or 3 seconds and sort of saying, what is my best option here? Which way do I want to go?
Yep.
That takes you down the sort of challenge fork in the stress road. There's a challenge road and there's a threat road. And as soon as you're under threat, you make bad decisions, you make dumb decisions, and all you do is you end up running down that threat road till you get to the end, and then you make excuses and justifications about how you got there.
Okay.
Way better to stop at the fork and go, okay, here's some problems, here's three solutions, which one am I going to pick?
Okay. So, mate, looking at that theory, and I obviously used one of a mismanagement, which causes an issue based on time. Mm-hmm. What about the person who's at home going, gee, I really should go train, but I don't want to, and that is happening day after day?
Yeah, it's this one's a little bit of a motivation one. We talked about, you and I talked about this last night. We're trying to work out why some people can fully get motivated with things and other people that seems to always be a fight.
Mm.
And we've sort of come up with a little bit of almost like a motivational ladder. So you think of something like that example of training. Yeah, you might start off with, I hate training.
Mm.
I don't want to go to the gym. I hate it. You know, and you might almost have a bit of fear in there. I don't want to do it. I don't want to be sore tomorrow. I just hate it. I don't want to do it. And that's the very bottom line. If you're doing that, your chances of working training and exercising into a habit that you're going to enjoy are so far.
Yep.
That's not going to happen. So you've got hate at the bottom. All right. And above that, you've kind of got hope. Yeah, okay, I'll join the gym and, I hope I'll go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yep. You're still fighting against the tide because you're not really wanting to. All right. Then you get to a point where you need to. You think, okay, I just need to do this. And then above that,
we're still on the fight here though, aren't we?
Yeah, we're
even
still in
this phase, we're still in the fight phase, yeah.
You're still in the fight. And then eventually you get to the point where, okay, I agree to you, I'm going to do it. But even at that stage, you're still kind of swimming against the current. You're still swimming against the tide because you're sort of forcing yourself to do something you don't really want to do.
Yeah.
But there's something happens round about that point where you're kind of agreeing to do stuff. You actually start doing it. And when you start doing something good like exercise, you then can... If you start noticing how you feel after the exercise, you kind of go, oh, that felt really nice. I felt good. You know, that was a good run today. That was a good train. And then all of a sudden you get into this other stage where you start to really like exercise. All right. And then people like you and I actually get to the point where they really, really love it. And they just, you know, I can't go a day without exercising.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so you think of the motivation to exercise when you're in that top of that ladder and you're loving it compared to the bottom of it. And you're sort of, you know, hating it or hoping that you can go and get the motivation to exercise. Some of them, it's an easy thing and you're swimming with the current and you're swimming with the tide and you just do it and it's a great thing. The other ones, you're always pushing against it and trying to sort of, the hassle is we try and get from hating it to loving it. And you kind of can't, you've kind of got to walk up the ladder. You can't take three steps at a time. Most of it comes from action. You've got to actually do stuff and notice when something feels good.
So acknowledge when something feels good.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a guy called BJ Fogg from Stanford in the US. If you want to read a book about habits, he wrote a book called Tiny Habits. And one of the things he talks about is he called it sunshine. He didn't have a word for it. I love the word sunshine. And he says that after you do something good or something that's getting you to where you want to be or something that's a goal that you want to do is to just give yourself a little pat on the back, give yourself a little, well done me, blow a little bit of sunshine up your bum. And there's something really cool about that because there's a thing called operant conditioning. And what operant conditioning means is that we repeat the things that feel good, we want to not do the things that feel bad, and we always take the path of least resistance. The path of least resistance is the habit part of it. And the way to form habits is to make sure that we attach the habits to feeling good. All right, I felt good about doing that. You know, it might have been a really hard train and your body's like jelly and all of that sort of stuff. But if you can frame that at the end of saying, that felt awesome, I did so well with that, I hit a PB on bench press and I did all of those things, then all of a sudden you're getting that, what BJ Fogg calls sunshine, you're getting that feel-good feeling at the end of it. And then your brain's associating that with something it wants to do again. So you're getting that conditioned response of, I want to do this again. And all of a sudden you're moving from, you know, need to and agreeing to do something to actually liking and loving it. And then you start swimming with the tide and creating a new habit isn't hard then.
That's an interesting concept. And that's a lot more of that is a lot of people and a lot of talks I've done with you have all been about what you do pre-getting stressed or when stress is happening. This is a post.
It's one, just finding that reward and noticing doing good things is a really important thing just to be able to sort of, you know, if you want to repeat something, you've got to notice what the good parts about it were when you finished doing it.
Yeah.
All right. And that part's really important. We don't do that. Yeah. There's a chemical that gets released in your brain after you've exercised for longer than about 30 minutes. And particularly if you've done hard exercise for longer than 30 minutes. And the chemical is called BDNF, which is brain-derived neurotrophic factor. And when you say things like that, you sound really smart.
Yeah, you sound pretty smart there for sure.
Yeah. But BDNF is basically brain fertilizer. It actually makes your brain, it stimulates your brain to make new brain. brain. So if you want to change your way of thinking, making new brains is a pretty good way to do it because you change connections in your brain and it stimulates your brain to be more flexible, more malleable. They call it neuroplasticity. So it's where the neurons and the wires in your brain can change. And after doing exercise, you produce a whole bunch of this chemical that actually makes your brain more plastic. The hassle is that once you do that, what are you doing after you finish exercising? Are you then, you know, oh, shit, I've got to get to work.
I'm having a protein drink, Luke. I don't know about you.
Protein drink would be good. And yeah. Protein drink's great because it again, tastes great, particularly the body science ones, Lean 5. The banana one's awesome.
You're a banana man, eh?
I love the banana one.
Oh, yeah. I can't get away from the caramel.
It's actually, I don't know if you've ever noticed cyclists go out there, they have their Lycra on, they always want to have coffee at the end. They love their coffee at the end. There's a little element of they've been riding their heads off and they've been going hammer and tong. They've got BDNF everywhere. Their brains are super flexible. Their way of actually saying that was a good ride and buying sunshine is actually having a coffee. Those people have then become super addicted to coffee because their brains become malleable and then they've gone and have coffee as their reward. So their coffee then, the pathways, the dopamine pathways that tell you that this is a good thing, I want to do this again, become reinforced from the BDNF and then going straight into the coffee afterwards.
You know where I struggle with all this when I sit back and look from the outside in is these are all really good concepts and ideas.
Mm.
How do I make that part of my life? You know, I know you're saying stop, get curious, think and do all these things.
Yeah.
But like just looking at my day today. So came in, had a 9 o'clocker that led into a 9:30 that led into a 10 o'clock that then had a group here where we had a meeting until 10:30 and it all gets done. And I'm not making out that I'm any different to anyone else. But for the people out there listening, these are really, really good ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But how do I, and probably not how do I get into it, how do I train myself to acknowledge, like I can, today I can feel the pressure of my day in my head. Like it's not talking to me or yelling at me or giving me any bad direction. I can just, it just feels like I've got a helmet on, I've got a hoodie on, beanie on, so I've probably got a headache from wearing a beanie. But I've got that feeling of, you know, when you wear a hat too long?
Yep.
And how do I just stop and go, Greg, you need to understand where, and I know you talked about the feeling in your gut and your hands. I don't have that. I don't I don't get a lot of that anger where I clench my fingers and teeth and all that. But I do, and I'm trying to get this out for people who are having these days. I'm an employer and a boss. So the reality is don't do it, walk away, don't do it. So I've got a little bit of luxury there that probably stops me from, you know, I would hate to be my EA, Claire. Like, wow, that's
good. I just had half an hour talking to Claire. She's wonderful.
Yeah. So because everything I do bounces via Claire. So
there's actually some really good there's really good science on that. The fastest way to get your cortisol levels down is actually to pick on someone lower down the food chain.
That's an ego thing though, because you know some people know they can because they're a boss.
No, I know but exactly what you're saying with what you're talking about then, and a lot of it does come back to that habit loop.
And this is what I want. This is what I really want to hit here, Luke. It's like we hear all these good theories and strategies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you look at you loved your Michael Jordan series, you look at Tiger Woods, repetition. At no stage are we saying, how do we start the repetition and what is that repetition? We're starting to become this better person that can reset myself. Like, I'm not suddenly going to go on a busy day, oh, stop, I've got to do the reset, get some curiosity around why I'm feeling like I am. What is it that is it part of my getting up in the morning and go, today I'm going to be thankful for this. And if I'm having a bad moment, I'm going to reset myself.
Well,
you know what I'm getting at here?
I know exactly what you're getting. And one of the things you've alluded to there, and it was a really good point, is to, you can do a thing called a pre-mortem. All right, we all know what a post-mortem is. You know, something bad happens, you think back and think, oh, well, that's where it went wrong. All right. You can actually do a pre-mortem with things. Things that you know, these are my triggers that are going to send me off and these are the things that are going to fire me up. All right. And one of the things, I used to get it a lot when I was under the pump doing optometry. You'd have a five in the waiting room, everyone's waiting, everyone's wanting a piece of you, you're putting out fires all over the place. And I could feel myself starting to tense up. I got those sort of little tensions in the stomach. And what that was my cue for is to sort of say, I'm just going to meditate for 30 seconds.
Yeah, nice.
30 seconds. That was it. So once I got to the point where I felt starting to feel those things and I'm feeling like I was rushing, the 30 seconds I took to actually stop and breathe and focus on being in the moment, then went out and Mrs. Jones, come on through and you then do the next thing in the best version of yourself. The hassle is if you carry over the stress from whatever the previous part of your day was.
Absolutely.
Into the next one, it doesn't work. Yeah. So before you go into a new meeting, I'm just going to backtrack a little bit. The way habits work is there's a thing called a habits loop. A guy called Charles Duhigg wrote a book called The Power of Habit. Great book from about 5 or 6 years ago. And habits have a loop. They have a cue, something that gets you started on the loop. They have something that you do, and they have a reward at the end. That's the way habit loops work, all right? The beauty of it.
Cue, action, reward.
Cue, action, loop. Reward, loop, and it keeps going around.
Keeps going around.
You get another cue later on.
Okay.
All right. So one of the good things is you can actually plant your cues. All right. You can actually do that pre-mortem and plant your cues that when this happens, I'm going to do this. All right. I was finding towards the end of my last few months being an optometrist, I just didn't want to go there. Every time I got there and got into it, I was okay. And I just didn't want to go there. So and I had this thought pattern going on in my head that I wasn't enjoying. I didn't want to be there. I'd already sold. I was just waiting for everything to go through, and I was phoning it in. But I was trying not to phone it in because it's just not me. I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And I used to have to walk from where I parked my push bike to through the shopping center to where I'd go to my shop. And every time I passed City Beach, I planted a queue there that from City Beach to my shop was about 100 meters.
Mm-hmm.
And at the moment I got to City Beach, I'd say to myself, how am I going to make this day as good as I can be? I'm going to be the best optometrist I can be. I'm going to be the best leader of my business that I can be. And I'm going to go into this in the right state. And every single day I had 100 meters of walking between City Beach and Specsavers to get myself in the state that I was going to be the best optometrist that I could be. And that became a habit. I walked past City Beach now.
And that's something you made yourself do.
Made myself do.
Yeah.
I have another one where every time I went to the bathroom as when I was at work, I used to watch miserable people walking around the shopping center and just, what the hell are you doing there if you're this miserable? And every single time I walked past Michael Hill Jeweler, I made sure I smiled. So it was just something, those two cues, I still walk past City Beach and even if I'm not going to work, the cues are still there.
Yeah.
But the beauty of it is you can plant them. You can plant them really easy. Even get your phone to go 11 o'clock, meditate for a minute.
Yep.
All right. Do that reset. Adam Fraser, who's an organizational psychologist from Melbourne, is at Deakin University. He's a really smart guy. He wrote a book called The Third Space. And the third space basically is that gap between going from one part of your life into the next part of your life. And he used to look at elite sports people, and he looked at people like tennis players. And what he noticed is that they might have just as good a serve as the other one. They might have just as good a backhand and just as good a forehand, and they were just as fast around the court. The difference between Roger Federer and whoever was number 200 in the world wasn't how good they were at tennis. It was how good they were of going from one point where they haven't played it well, but then playing the next point really well. Whereas the other one started kicking stones and didn't handle that. Didn't go into the next point.
Started thinking too much.
Started thinking too much. Was kicking stones about not doing the last one real well. Yeah. Last one's gone. Your Roger Federers of this world could actually stop and say, okay, that backhand was really terrible. I'm going to do this one next time. Breathe in, bounce the ball four times, throw it up the amount of times you do it. And then we'd play the next thing perfectly.
So is that what John McEnroe was doing when he was smashing rackets? Was that his way, or was that just?
It might have been. Mm. Yeah, there's. I've heard a few interviews with McEnroe talking about how he definitely did it deliberately.
Yeah.
To get his mind in the game. Michael Jordan did it as well. There was a couple of things in that Last Dance documentary where Michael Jordan talked about, you know, making stuff up that someone else had said that they didn't even say, but that was his way that he got fired up to do it. And that's kind of a way of planting cues, all right? Adam Fraser tells another great story in the third space about a CEO, full-on high-powered, full-on high-stress dude, and he came home early from work one day, and as he was going to open the front door, he looked through their little window on the side of the door, and his kids looked out, saw him, and scarpered. They ran out to their bedroom because he's a high-powered CEO. He comes in yelling and screaming, firing.
I know where you're going with this.
And so what happened was he worked out from that I'm coming home and I'm not being a very good dad, right? This guy was CEO of a massive big company and stuff. So what he actually did is he changed a door in from his garage that went straight to his bedroom. He went into his bedroom, he had a shower, he got changed, he took his three-piece suit off, he put his home clothes on, and by the time he'd done that little transformation, he actually walked outside and he was a dad.
To dad, yep.
All right? So he'd gone from being high-powered business dude into I'm dad dude. And that's kind of what I'm talking about with resets and stress habits as well, is that you want to be able to plant those cues to sort of say, I'm going to go into the next part of my day being the best version of myself for what that is. And the hassle is we don't do that a lot. We just go with the default of I'm feeling this way and I'm justified to feel this way because of these excuses I've made up and I'm okay to do that. And I just don't think it helps.
Yep.
So planning cues of, okay, I want to be this way in this situation. Where am I going to plan? It might be as you walk up the stairs to body science, I'm going to have a really good day today and I'm going to do this. You know what I mean? Planting those little cues in your day that actually put you in the right frame of mind.
I have my reset moment in my garage.
With your bells.
With my bells, yeah.
I love your bells.
Yeah, so that's my in and out. And I just do it. I don't even think about it now. Even when it's dark now, if you go surfing or something in the morning, I just put my hand in, I know exactly where it hits.
Yeah.
I say my piece I want to say.
Do you still say the same thing in your head?
I start it the same way, but the end of it is what is topical with me.
Yeah, okay.
And it's always about wishing happiness to the world.
Yeah.
And then to certain people, if I think somebody needs it or somebody, even people like we often get attacked or sued and stuff by mm-hmm. certain people, like on those
that
days.
That must be massively stressful too when that happens. Like I've heard some of the cases and they're ridiculous, a few of them.
If you're doing the wrong thing, that would be very stressful.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing the right thing and somebody doesn't agree with you, well, you have every right to fight that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if we were doing something illegal and hurting people, I would be vomiting in a corner over that.
The amount of testing you guys do and all that sort of stuff.
Look, I'm happy to go to sleep at night with what we do as a brand. We're 21 years old. We would have been, that type of thing gets found out pretty easily, pretty quickly. The world changes, you know, people believe in different things and the way things are done and, you know, raw versus packaged versus clean. You know, we just adapt and grow and some people like that, some don't. There's always going to be haters.
I always got amazed with that, how well you seem to take that in your stride. Legal issues that seem really frivolous and they don't seem to hassle you too much. And how do you do that? How do you compartmentalize that?
Well, mate, I think it's a lot to do with how you talk about stress. You know, there's two sides to legal. There's good legal and bad legal. You know what I mean? Like if you get a letter across your desk that says we don't like what you're doing, that's bad legal. But on the other side, I have good legal that says you haven't done the wrong thing, Greg. Don't worry about that letter. We got you covered.
Yeah, okay.
And that's a very simplistic overview, but that's the truth of it. It's not my lane. I can't change what someone thinks about me and I have the right to sue someone tomorrow too. That's not my driver. No. And in fact, we don't really attack anyone in that area because I've got better things to do than play in that area. And it's part of my resetting myself each day is I'm not going to get up and sue someone today. I don't want to. You know what I mean? I'm not going to get into a fight with anyone today. I don't want to. You know, I have those chats with myself regularly on because I know who I'm talking to. I know where I'm going. You know, we deal with some big organizations and we're a small player. We're two families that own a business that's been going for 21 years. We're not Nike. We're not Coke. We play in the same shelves they do though, in the same stores that they do. And I've got a great team around me that I know and I believe and I trust in, mate. And I think that's part of, you talk about your reset process, but you've got to have your base right before you can reset.
Yeah.
You know, and my base is good. I've got a strong base around me. I've had a long time to work out what that looks like and feels like. I've got a good partner. I've got a good life partner. I've got a great crew at work. You know, my division's called the Octagon and we love it. You know, bring the fight. We're in. So for me personally, I look at a lot what you do, like your stress in the fork row and all the things you do. I really try to be that person now. Because it's really easy to go, the fuck are we what? You know, like who did that? And then as soon as you say that, you go, oh my God, I've just alienated someone because I'm the boss.
But what you've done then is you just notice, you've almost used that I've stepped over the line as my cue.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's a really good time to stop and say, okay.
So I haven't done that for a long time, you know. I got mentored through that process. Like that was one of the things. And when I looked at, we did a lot of personal development here at Body Science for a while where we had funds to work with team, funds to work on me, funds mm-hmm. to work with Nathan and all that. And we looked at what we were going to do. And you were part of that.
Your group
came in and did a lot of talking to our team on Carlos, and we'll touch Carlos later. Carlos is the better version of me, or you, I should say. But for me, it's very much, and as someone, like I can really have collateral damage in what I do. If I start coming in here and going, blah, 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 Claire will just look at me, come in with a bottle of water and go, I don't think you've drunk any water today, Greg. That's her cue to me. That's her cue to me, like, let's just cool down. Let's just get to a pace where the world is at the same, we're not in Greg's lane here. We're all going at the same pace for the same direction. So she's got her cues that I understand is a cue for me to go, okay, I'm probably running a little bit fast here and I'm just going to slow down because it's really easy to have a vision and have a hustle and all those garbage words that people use. To me, that's just life. Okay. So that my perspective on that is that's just the life and how I choose to do it. But I do have these reset moments where I sit and stop and I wait.
Yeah.
And I think we've called them here habitually like a pop moment.
Okay.
Just let it pop. You don't have to think about it. How bad was it? Because you know what it's like. As soon as something's going to go wrong, you've visualized it 45 different different times in 1 second before it actually happens, if it does happen.
There's a thing in the book I have that talks about, of the things you worry about, how many of them actually come true.
Oh, the percentage would be low, wouldn't it?
85% of them don't.
Yep.
85% of things you worry about don't come true. 12% do come true but don't have the really bad outcome that you thought they would. And 3% come true and do have the bad outcome.
Yeah.
So, 3% of things. So, 1 in 33 things that you worry about actually come true and have the result as bad as you imagined that the result would have been.
Yeah.
That's not very many. 1 in 33 is not coming up very often.
My big thing now too is, and I don't look at things as now. I want to get things done now, but I don't look at things as now, is am I going to care about this next week?
Yeah.
That's a big question I ask myself before I take the next step. Luke Mathers, author of Stress Teflon. Today, we're going to talk about Calm Stress Support, a new tablet we've launched, mate. You've been a part of the development of that product.
Yeah, it's been great. It's been really good. I particularly like it on those times late at night when your head's rolling around and things are whizzing around your head and you can't quieten it down. A couple of Calm Stress Support at night and off you go, Zedland, here we come.
Yeah, nice. For me, it's in the morning. Get up, get that focus. Don't let all those incoming bad drive-in emails, I'd say bad boss, but don't talk about myself. For me, it's a morning product. I love it. I start every morning with it. So for me, it's definitely about that.
Yeah, just the fact that the science on it is amazing, how quickly it gets the cortisol down. Cortisol's there. You're meant to have cortisol. It's good stuff, but you don't want it there all day.
Anyone interested? Bodyscience.com.au. Check it out.
One of the gurus of organizational psychology is Simon Sinek.
Mm-hmm.
And Simon Sinek wrote a book called The Infinite Game. And that's what he talks about. He's not worried about whether his market share's X percent or Y percent. He's just worried about, is he doing things so that his business is still going forward in 10, 20, 30 years' time? Yeah. He's playing the infinite game.
Yeah, nice.
And I think a lot of companies perhaps don't do that. They look at the things, this is going to make me feel good right now if my KPIs for the June quarter hit what they've got to hit. And if they don't, the hassle with that is that you're then attaching your well-being, you're attaching your view of yourself, you're attaching your opinion of whether you're good at your job is to what that one KPI was. And, you know, you might get something like COVID comes in and just demolishes everything that you were actually judging yourself on. We all need self-worth. One of the foundations of Stress Teflon was the pride from contribution, the pride from feeling like you're doing a good job, the pride from passion and contributing. And one of the things is if we attach too heavily to numbers and KPIs and things like that, those things go away. So noticing the other good things that you do in your life, that sunshine that BJ Pogg talked about of noticing a good thing that I've done or noticing a nice, you know, rainbow. Yeah, that's a good thing. Because the hassle with that is that we have a negative bias, right? Humans, evolutionary, have a negative bias. If you were wandering, our ancestors 100,000 years ago, wandering around the Serengeti, to be paranoid and being anxious probably kept him alive.
Yeah.
All right? So that stuff, this dude next to him, two of them walking down through the Serengeti, one of them got anxious and looked around and was always hunting for tigers. The other one was walking around looking at rainbows in Luke Land thinking life's wonderful. That dude didn't pass on his genes.
No, he's dead.
The one that was anxious and the one that was on edge and the one that was looking around was the one that actually got to cover and got safe and passed on his genes. The positive one didn't make it back then. So back then when it was scarcity and everything was worry and everything was a threat, anxiety and paranoia were really, really helpful. Things like gratitude didn't help them back then. All right. So we're not hardwired for gratitude and we need to do that on purpose. We need to do that deliberately because it's not something that's wired into us from thousands and thousands.
Yeah, it's funny when you talk about gratitude, and we're probably a little bit off track here, but this morning I got a phone call from Dr. Craig Duncan at, I don't know, it was 6:45. He goes, "How are you, Greg? Good." He goes, "What are you grateful for today?" And I went, "Legend." Like that, you know what I mean? Just, and he goes, "Rightio, thanks, got to go." You know what I mean? He just called me out for that.
That was it.
Yeah. And then today when I was, I walked into the Octagon after the third meeting in a row and Ash, who works on our website, looks at me and goes, and she's obviously gone, "Oh, I can just see the eyes, you know, in him." She goes,
"I don't want to point it out. You're not the best poker player in the whole entire world.
I don't play
pretty
poker.
Much tell what's going on with your face."
Yeah. And she just goes, "Greg, what's three things you're grateful for today?" And I stopped and I just looked at her and I went, "You." Claire and Rookie, because you know, I'm really thankful that I'm in this zone that I'm in and you guys are doing everything that needs to be done. I was so thankful that I just know that team gets things done.
It's amazing how gratitude.
But it made the rest of my day slow down, you know, in her saying that, because that one reset moment, you know, it just made me get curious on, well, now, because I backed into a couple of big national supply chain chats about what's happening in a year and
yeah.
year two and how that section should look and all that. So it's
and then your stuff brain that doesn't exist. Making plans and working out how you're going to do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and so it, but it was really interesting that how my day today came out. And without these people around me that, you know, I started that, what are you grateful for? Three things you're grateful for every day. And everyone looked at me and goes, idiot. Day one, day two, day three.
No,
Rookie good. Would look at me and go, I'm not grateful for anything. And now he'll do the same thing. If he sees that Claire's off track or someone's off track, he'll go, what's three things we're grateful for today? And it stops everybody and we reset and go, okay, life is a little bit okay. Get back into line. Let's not fall into that collateral. That
bit like a speedboat where a speedboat zooms along and he's going along.
He's having a great day. Life. It's beautiful.
He's causing yeah. absolute mayhem with his weight yeah. behind it.
And a boss has every chance to do that. A bad manager has every chance to do that. And even a bad coworker has every chance to do that in an environment. Well, it's nice that I've got these people around me that, and where I was going to with, I started that, you know, what are you grateful for? Three things.
Mm.
Now it's really easy. It rolls off Rookie's tongue and everyone's tongue. It was a real struggle at first for people to go, what is he talking about? But now we use it without even knowing
yeah.
with each other. And it's a really good place to be when things are getting a little bit edgy and a little bit on, that you've got these other people that help you reset and get you back to where you want to be. Or we do it for them as well.
That thing you talked about three things that you're grateful for. There's a Harvard positive psychologist called Sean Acor, one of the best TED Talks you'll ever watch.
Yeah.
Look up Sean Acor on TED. And we did it with one of our businesses a couple of times. And it had a 21-day happiness advantage.
Right, you 21 days happiness advantage.
Okay. Right.
Is that what Sean Acor writes?
Yeah. And in the happiness advantage, you've got to say three things every day that you're grateful for and one random act of kindness.
You have to do one random act of kindness at the same time and go and do it, or do you just
You look back at the end of the day and what was my random act of kindness I did.
That's not, I like that.
I actually talk about it in the book, and I put a photo of a post-it note that one of the girls had gone and put in the public toilets and stuck it on the back of the door, and she just wrote, "You're beautiful," and went back a few hours later and went to the same cubicle and someone else had written, "So are you."
That's gold.
It was absolute gold. But you know, he's one of the world leading scientists on happiness. And that was his major thing that to do was to be grateful. There's some biochemical stuff with that too.
Some people hate the gratitude line, mate. They go, that's just crap.
No, it does physiological things. When you act with gratitude, you increase DHEA.
Mm-hmm.
And DHEA is one of the hormones that helps you produce things like estrogen and testosterone and stuff. I'll stay in my lane and let Mac talk about something like that. All right. But because gratitude does that, it also decreases cortisol. All right. So we want cortisol to come down. That's the star of the stress show. Cortisol is the thing that makes people sick and all of that sort of stuff when it's too high. Calm stress support, which we talked about earlier.
Love that.
Gets your cortisol down, all right? But so does being grateful, because it increases your DHEA levels, which actually then decreases your cortisol level. So there's an inverse relationship for that. So there's something really good about gratitude and getting into that habit. And again, planting the triggers for that habit. You know, I'm going to brush my teeth and I'm going to leave a little diary next to my toothbrush. And when I finish brushing my teeth, I'm going to write my three things that I'm grateful for.
Yeah, well, I do a little differently. I spend a lot of time with Dr. Craig Duncan, as you know, chatting about, and he monitors Nathan and I every day through his app that he's got. But part of the things that we do is, as soon as you wake up, three things you're grateful for straight away.
Yeah, okay.
Bang, bang, bang. You know, a lot of them are repetitious, because I'm always grateful for my family and the life I've been given. Like, always something that I'll always be grateful for. I could make changes at time, and I don't think I actually would. You know, I love where I sit in that place, but that's something I do, put my feet on the ground and before I get up and just make myself do that.
But what you're doing there is planting cues, all right? And we can do that. The hassle is you've got to do it on purpose.
I do on purpose, because it's really easy to get up and grab your phone. It's really easy to go and bust and go to the toilet. Whatever it is you've got to do, you've got to stop yourself and go, yes, I am 51 and I am busting, but I'm going to sit here and be grateful.
Yep.
You know, and I do that every day. And then I look at the text message to see if we're going surfing.
Yeah, okay.
And then I probably will get back into bed on weekend.
But the one thing to take away from that is that you have the ability to plant the cues that make you do the habit that you want to do.
Yeah.
All right. And I think that's a really important thing to do, the cues to make you do the habit that you want to do.
And they're my big ones. In the morning, leaving the house, coming back into the house, they're three not negotiables for me.
I have another one, a bit like the guy who, you know, built the new way to get into his house so he could have a shower and come out and be a dad. I'm a bit of it, like everyone, I'm a little bit, look at my phone more than I want to, and I don't allow my phone into my house. I plug it in the office, which is right near the garage as we walk in. I plug it in there. I leave the ringer on, so if someone really wants me, they can ring me and I'll hear it and I'll come back and ring them back.
Yeah.
All right. But I don't take my phone.
Your phone's not dictating your life. You're using the phone when you want
it. I'm using the phone when I want to.
And that takes away a lot of stress in you, doesn't it?
It does, because I call that a noise-canceling habit.
Mm-hmm.
A noise-canceling habit. Noise is distractions, all right? And I don't mean noise as in sound. I mean, noise is just anything that gets, that distracts you from whatever you're doing, for making you not present in the moment. And phones do that because we've got this sort of aversion to boredom now. Boredom's turned in, I'm just had a little pause then.
Yeah, I like that.
But boredom's turned into the like devil. No one wants to be bored. And there's actually some things that are good about boredom. Boredom actually,
I think the new trend is finding boredom. Finding parts where you don't need to be anything for anyone, or you don't, just being yourself in that moment.
Yeah. And it's something I struggle with. I'm always like, well, cool, what's next? Because I'm a bit like Tigger and just bouncing around and want to find out what's next. And there's something about just stop and seeing in the moment, which is really, really good. And because we've got all of those distractions coming at us all the time, and our phones are a big one, they're right in our pocket, they're right ready to go all the time. Putting that in another room is what I call a noise cancelling habit. It's something I don't have to think about now because it's not within reach. It's not giving me buzzes and cues to say, look at me, look at me.
Yeah.
And by doing that one thing has actually eliminated 5 or 6 or 7 or 20 distractions that I might have had over the next couple of hours. So try and think of what are some noise cancelling habits that you can do. Habits that you can do once and they stop you having to, you know, resist a distraction for the next 2 hours. I think that's another one to try and plant into your day as well.
Well, mate, some good tips there at the bottom of bodyscience.com.au. If you click on the podcast link, we'll put some of those books that you mentioned and so people can find them. Because I quite often people go to me, oh, I listen to you on Luke's podcast. What was that book he talked about? And I go, yeah, got nothing for you there, sorry. So let's get that sorted out. Luke, thanks for coming on. When's your book out? Do you know? You got a date?
I haven't as yet.
Yeah.
Well, but that will involve me planting habits and writing.
It's probably been slowed down a little bit over COVID, to be honest, too. You've been quite busy, too, on our Facebook Lives, doing a lot of talks about stress and life. We're probably going to have to start talking a little bit about not the stress of COVID and what it's created, but the stress of coming out of where we've just been and actually starting to deal with humans again. Because I don't know if you've been on the road. When COVID was on, it was a nice place to drive. It's a little bit different to drive these days.
It's getting busy again.
It is. Life's getting busy and the world is taking a different
path. I think one of, going back to what we talked about before, is we have defaults and we're going to default back to exactly how we were before, all right? And there's heaps and heaps of things that we found in COVID that were actually an advantage. You know, we played Monopoly with my wife and daughter the other night.
My family's been doing jigsaw puzzles and actually kids cooking dinner at night. Like that just hasn't happened before.
There's things that we've got to sort of deliberately say, well, these X, Y, and Z were really, really good over COVID. I want to make sure we hang on to them and not just defaulting back to life needs to go 1,000 miles an hour. I think if nothing else, COVID's taught us that we've got to slow down. We've got to learn to relax a little bit and we've got to sort of take some notice and be grateful of some of the good things that are around it.
If you want to get in contact with Luke, lukemathers.com.au. His Instagram account is
finding.carlos.
Is that your Instagram account?
That's one of them.
Wow. That makes sense. Very few people out there going, what's he doing? If you're looking for anything from Body Science, bodyscience.com.au, get on board. Thanks for being part of our podcast. And if you can tell a friend about it, we'd appreciate it. Thanks, team.
Thanks, mate.
Today's podcast was brought to you by our partners in Fit, Happy and Healthy, ASN, Nutrition Warehouse, DY Discount Vitamins, Fat Burners Only, Evelyn Fay, Mr. Supplement, or find a retailer online at bodyscience.com.au/retailers.